Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. The other day there was wonderful Nityananda Katha, and on that day I was reflecting how Srila Prabhupada was the embodiment of the fearless mood of Nityananda in spreading Krishna consciousness. And I was recalling how Srila Prabhupada, when he first began speaking to us, this was in very early 1967 in San Francisco, speaking to us about Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And I remember particularly the first time he paused and he said, if you see Lord Nityananda going into a bar, don't think he has gone to drink. And it was kind of a stunning statement. But later I came to see how Srila Prabhupada was just like Lord Nityananda, that he could go anywhere in any circumstance and don't think that he had gone there to partake of the various situations that were being offered for sense gratification. He was going forward to preach the mission of Krishna consciousness. So in that mood, Srila Prabhupada left India, which was for the sadhus considered almost heretical. This was something you didn't do. You didn't leave the holy land of Bharat. And he went to the western countries, the Malechas, where all the Yavanas and the Chandalas were congregating and celebrating life. And he engaged all of these people, like Mumapati Maharaj was speaking yesterday at his initiation, that he wore a pair of short pants, he had a beard and long hair. And this wasn't so unusual in the very beginning days. And yet he could see through the beards and the long hairs and the short pants and the short skirts and everything else and take that risk to engage that particular living soul, that particular entity. And then he even stepped on an airplane in January of 1967 for the first time, and he flew across the United States from New York to San Francisco. So again, another daring innovation that Srila Prabhupada took in spite of any risk of criticism or any concern about his own reputation. He went to places like the Avalon Ballroom, which was where we held the Mantra Rock Dance, and that place probably would make a bar look almost sanctified, and yet he went there and fearlessly induced 2,000 totally stoned out, drugged out hippies to stand up and chant in Hare Krishna. Of course, afterwards he said, this is no place for a brahmachari. Srila Prabhupada was filled with so many wonderful qualities, and there is a little booklet that you may be familiar with, the 25 qualities of a Vaishnava, and then the author of that book has related those qualities to Srila Prabhupada. But 25 is just a token amount, and of course there is so many unlimited qualities that we cannot even begin to extol Srila Prabhupada's virtues and glories. But I was thinking of a few of his qualities that I would just sprinkle out. One was that Srila Prabhupada was very creative. And I would offer as proof of his creativity, of course there are so many instances, but the fact that he created ISKCON in itself is a wonderful proof of his creativity. He was very intuitive, that he would know before an incident would become known or be revealed, he would sense the situation and either correct it or make it known to the rest of us. He was genuine. This was mentioned yesterday consistently. In America, we have a saying that says, the real McCoy. So sometimes you have the real, you know, the real thing, and then you have the imitation thing. So when it's the real thing, you say the real McCoy. So Srila Prabhupada was the real thing. He wasn't artificial. He wasn't play acting. He was genuine. And he was also very chivalrous. So quite often this word chivalrous is kind of reminiscent of the days of yore when there was knights riding on horses and, you know, shining armor. But chivalrous has a mood, so Srila Prabhupada was very chivalrous. And one of his acts of great chivalry was on the installation of Radha Landanishwara when the pillar started to collapse. And above this pillar was holding, another platform, and on that platform was Jagannath Subhadra and Baladev. But they were over the head of Radha Landanishwara. So when the pillar started to collapse, it looked very much like a doomsday situation. And Srila Prabhupada, without any noise or any type of attention to himself, somehow or other managed to go from where he was sitting on one side of this altar to this shaking pillar, putting his foot on the lower step of the altar, and stopped the whole affair from crashing down on the head of the deities. He was very, very affectionate. This was mentioned yesterday also. In one letter was quoted yesterday. In another letter, he said, this was a letter addressed to all of the devotees in San Francisco in 67, said, "If as you are remembering me, I am also thinking about all of you." And on another letter, he wrote to Jamuna, and then at the end of the letter, he put, "And how is my naughty daughter, Janaki Devi?" You know, he was always full of affection. He was also very spontaneous. One example of that, among many, was here in Bengal when he was taking a car ride and the horn of the car went out. So, as you all know, this is an essential part of the car, you know, the engine, the brakes, and the horn. And the horn went out. So Srila Prabhupada had Gargamuni take a tin plate and a stick and lean out the window and bang on this tin plate, you know. Very, very spontaneous. And on another time, this was very, very early on in New York City, and he had his small little Radha Krishna deities, Radha Govinda, and he dressed the deities, and he was looking at Radharani's skirt, and he turned to Jadarani, and he said, "Bring me a stick." And she couldn't imagine, you know, what does he want a stick for? But she went and got the stick, and he put it under Radharani's skirt to make the skirt stand out. So that was very spontaneous. Srila Prabhupada was also very authoritative. And yesterday, Indra Jumna Maharaj was speaking about the time that Srila Prabhupada was in Paris and the audience was heckling him. They were telling him in French to sit down, sit down. You know, meaning, because he was on a raised Vyasa sign and they wanted him, you know, down on the floor like, you know, a common person. And Srila Prabhupada stood up and he said he could sit on the floor and that was no problem. But were any one of them prepared to sit up there and speak about the absolute truth? And in speaking in such an authoritative way, he was able to completely quiet the audience and, you know, avert the chaos. Also, Srila Prabhupada was very regal in his behavior. So also in Paris, there was an incident where a meeting was arranged with a very high official. And things were, at that point, maybe nowadays things aren't so formal, but at that point in time, things were quite formal. So there was a room that you would meet the persons, you know, persons who were a dignitary, the high official, they would meet you in this particular room. A very formal room with some formal chairs, and Prabhupada came in and he sat down, waiting for this important person, so-called important person, to enter. And the protocol was when the important person entered, everybody would stand up. So everybody stood up except Srila Prabhupada, and the person was waiting and waiting, and Prabhupada was also waiting, but he was sitting. And so somebody came over, you know, and told him when they wanted him to stand up, and Prabhupada said that he would not stand up for this person. I can't remember the exact, maybe Indradumna Maharaj was there and knows the exact, but he should stand up for me. And Prabhupada refused to stand up. So it was an awkward moment. But it wasn't about ego. It was about what was correct. Srila Prabhupada was correct. And finally, it was understood that he was correct, and the meeting carried on. It was very regal. And one thing that in the hippie era, there was kind of like a saying that if something happened that was, or that we considered was kind of unusual, or we'd say, oh, that was far out. And if it was really far out, we'd say, wow, that really blew my mind. So one thing that I noticed right away with Srila Prabhupada was nothing ever blew his mind. He didn't get flustered by anything. He didn't get ruffled, you know, by anything. And I will give a couple, so many unlimited examples of that, just, you know, landing on the boat in New York City and walking, you know, going through the Lower East Side, you know, there were so many things that could have given him cause to pause. But when I had my initiation, we couldn't understand what was going on in terms of some of the protocol. So at one point, he was trying to tell us to bow down, and we couldn't understand his English at that point. And there was a lot of noise in the room, the kirtan, and the unfamiliarity of being... We were in the third fire ceremony, and it was the first one on the West Coast, so none of us had seen this event before. And he was trying to tell us, bow down, bow down, but we couldn't understand what he was saying. So the person who was going to be our temple president thought he understood what he was saying, and he started blowing on the fire. And the rest of us also started blowing on the fire. And I looked up, and there was a smoke everywhere, and through the smoke I could see Srila Prabhupada's eyes, and they had gotten really large. So we used to call those saucer eyes, like, you know, what a saucer is, you know. So we kind of understood maybe this is not what we were supposed to be doing. In the meantime, Srila Prabhupada picked up a pair of kartals and just began a kirtan. What could he do with his foolish young disciples? And then another time, I went with him and other devotees, we drove from Delhi to Kurukshetra, and a storm came up. Everything just went dark, and trees were actually falling down on the road. And, you know, it was like whether you should stop or go, and nothing seemed like safe. And Srila Prabhupada was completely serene. You know, like nothing blew his mind. But later I was thinking, when the Krishna book came out, and you saw all the wonderful activities of Lord Krishna, I was thinking, whatever's going on in the material world is just nothing compared to what's going on in the spiritual world, and Prabhupada's always in the spiritual world. So, you know, there was really nothing down here to blow his mind. And finally, just a small... just very, very early in our first meeting, was within the first few weeks of meeting Srila Prabhupada. We were already initiated. That happened like within the first 3 weeks. Myself and my husband, Shamsundar, we both had dreams. They weren't on the same night, but we both had a dream. And in my dream, I was walking down by the Golden Gate Bridge. It's a big bridge that connects San Francisco to the rest of the Bay Area. And there's like a tide land. So when the water's in, there's a big water there. When the water goes out, there's these mud flats with little rivulets in it. So I was standing on the shore looking across, and I wanted to go to the other side, but I didn't know how to maneuver these rivulets. And also in that mud, there's called quick mud. It'll suck you in. So I wasn't sure how to like get over to the other side. And suddenly a little boat came, and there was Swamiji. And he said, get in, I'll take you over. And I immediately got in. So that was my dream. And then Shamsundar had a dream that he was driving Swamiji, which we often did. He was driving him, and we already knew that Prabhupada did not know how to drive, because I used to be his driver in San Francisco early on. So the first time I drove him, I turned and I asked him, "Swamiji, do you know how to drive?" And he said, "No," he said, "but I had two cars." So not knowing the Indian system about having a driver, I was thinking it was like some kind of magic and he'd just get in the car and it would go. So we knew, you know, but I told all the other devotees, you know, that he didn't know how to drive, but he had two cars. So Shamsundar was driving him in his dream, and Prabhupada suddenly said to him, and another thing, San Francisco is full of straight up and down hills. It's not like flatlands. So you really have to know what you're doing to drive there. And suddenly they were at a stop sign right on a hill, and Prabhupada turns to him in his dream, and he goes, "Now I will drive." And Shamsundar immediately got out, although he knew Prabhupada didn't know how to drive, and, you know. So we were wondering about these dreams. So we went to Prabhupada, and we told him our dreams. And, we wanted to know if that was really him. You know, did he really come to us in our dreams? And he said, "Yes, the spiritual master will come in your dreams, and he can instruct you in your dreams." But then he gave us the quote from the Bhagavatam that we think that we have met your grace by the will of providence, so that we may accept you as the captain of our ship to carry us over the ocean of material existence. So when he spoke that to us, we felt very safe and secure to be with Srila Prabhupada. And actually, we never wanted to leave him, although I can say at one point in my struggles, I tried to do that. But still, because he was the captain of my ship, he insisted I remain with him and drug me back. So on this day, I'm eternally grateful to his lotus feet. Thank you very much.